you that I have an anxiety issue?
Hello and welcome to The Kind, The Creative and The Chaotic with me, your host and biggest fantasy, Kelly Jade. And I am of course joined by Sound Guy and the most enthusiastic man on air, Mr. Wayne Naylor.
Hey.
So what's the tea? How was New York?
New York was good. Yeah. I don't know. I only really go there for New York Comic Con, so it's just like...
Yeah.
And a lot of cinema trips, so I saw a lot of good films.
Yeah?
Yeah, I saw films not coming out here anytime soon called The Death of Dick Long.
Okay, what's that about?
About three guys, they're in a band who mostly do new metal covers of Nickelback and all sorts.
Okay.
One of their friends dies and they have to effectively take that secret to their grave because the way he dies is not acceptable.
And that's all you can say on that before ruining the film for everybody else.
Yeah, but holy shit. It's hilarious, but man.
And what about Comic-Con? How was that? Did you dress up?
I did not dress up, no.
Oh, you should have said I did, but I was the Invisible Man, so you didn't know.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, I guess I dressed up as London Street Guy number 5.
Okay.
There we go.
Fine. You know, and what was the best costume that you saw?
Oh, wow. Best costume?
So a lot of superheroes. Iron Man, Spider-Man, Captain America, Man.
There was one for me personally. So one of my favourite films this year is one called Midsommar. And someone was dressed up as Midsommar. One of the girl from Midsommar from the festival. And the boyfriend character who at some point is in a bear costume, which...
A bear costume?
I won't say any further, but anyone who's watched the film kind of knows what it is. But I was like, oh, that's good. That's some good shit.
Okay.
But yeah. No, really good stuff. Like, it's so impressive to sort of see these people who have, like, sold these costumes and
yeah, they look
so
good. Yeah, buying them.
Yeah, there was a really good Wonder Woman there that I saw, and I was like, she looked the part, so I was like, no, some good stuff. Yeah, okay. Really good stuff.
And do you find it overwhelming? Because it's, obviously it's comics and stuff, but it's massively on film too. Is it overwhelming, or does it inspire you when you go?
I don't know, like, it's a weird one. Like, it's effectively, I don't know, like, when I first went there, I was like, oh, man, I'd love to be a part of this. But as I got an older, I thought to myself, you know what? It's a lot of hassle, you know? And, like, I kind of get to enjoy the show just as a spectator. And I can only imagine if you're going there as, like, talent or stuff like that, yeah. Then you can't hit the show floor. You've got schedules to be a part of. If you've got a film there, you've got to be doing all these interviews and stuff like that. And it's part of the job comes to territory, but it's just like, man... Not being able to go on the show floor and buy ridiculously expensive stuff that I know I'm going to regret at some point, but it's just like, you know
what? The thing is, if you're the talent, then you probably get that sent to you. And you get to sit on stage on the panel and see all your fans dressed up as you.
But you know what? That kind of makes me sad, though, because it's just like, part of the thing that I kind of love about it is like, you go there and you spend stupid money on stuff that you would never spend. You're like, that's the only place where you'd be like, yeah, I'll buy this jacket for $200. Like, you're not going to buy a jacket for $200 in your normal life. It's just like, you go to Comic-Con, it's like, ah, screw it. Let's go for it.
Didn't you get some really expensive trainers last time?
I did.
Were they Space Jam? No.
No. They were just the Jordan Legacy 312s.
I like how you look at me and expect me to know what that means.
So they were originally done by a guy called Don C. So he did like a collaboration with Nike, stuff like that. So okay. I was sort of looking at them from far and I was like, they were called the Hyper Jades. So I was like, oh, I need them. And then I saw them in person. I was like, yep. They're loud, abrasive. I would never wear them usually. This is the perfect trainer to buy on a trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are coming up to Halloween. Was there anything particularly spooky? Is anyone dressed in anything terrifying? Like I said, it's a lot of superheroes.
Not really a lot of horror stuff. I mean, there were a lot of Pennywise clowns.
Pennywise, oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of It clowns. So, yeah. I don't know. I find them kind of adorable. It's like,
adorable?
Oh, look at you. Pennywise the dancing clown. Gonna kill a kid, yay! No, I'm joking. Nah.
Well, staying on today's horror vibe, we have Dracula. No, I'm joking. Today's guest recently got back into the rap game after having a little time out. and released his second album, which is called The Night Elm on Mare Street. In the past, he supported the likes of Mac Miller, has collaborated with Rizzle Kicks, Example, Paloma Faith, and Ed Sheeran. He's a resident presenter on Fubar Radio and is a pioneer in the field of puns. Can we get a warm welcome for Michael Payne?
Thank you very much.
That's a good welcome.
That was an amazing introduction.
Yeah, man.
I love that.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I like the president resenter, because that's actually what I am, rather than resident presenter. Yeah. I'm a president resenter. I preside over all the resenting that gets done of stuff. I like that.
That should be your new bio.
I think it's going to be. You know.
Insta.
Mm.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has, since I've seen you.
Yeah.
And since I've had anything... I don't know, worthy of talking about.
No, don't say, we've got lots to talk about. We used to do Fubar Radio together. I don't know if you know, or anyone listening knows. And I used to come, I think it was like every Saturday?
No, Friday.
Was it Friday?
Yeah.
Last 10 minutes, panic presenting about pop stars, because I was usually hungover, woke up, looked at Google. You knew more than I did most of the time. But that was fun.
That was a lot of fun. That's how we first met.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How is that going? How is the radio life treating you?
You know, it's been... I think I did my 200th show Wednesday last week.
Did you celebrate that?
Yeah, we had a few sweets and stuff.
Sweets?
Yeah, Natalie brought some sweets in. The thing is, we have alcohol quite regularly on the show.
Oh.
That's the thing. And... so sweets was actually more of a treat than a drink.
I feel that.
It seemed a bit much of a muchness having alcohol. So Natalie got some quite exotic sweets in, which was cool.
Fancy.
We had some good guests. I spoke to Ho Pik Poku from Top Boy.
Yeah.
Right. Amazing. So that was a massive treat. You know, you. I think if you reach a milestone episode, you've got to have something special. You know, guest wise. You know.
Exactly.
So obviously all the guests we had on the 200th show were great, but interviewing a cast member of Top Boy was that's a treat.
Oh, that's it, because that's just been, it's like it's a remake, isn't it?
No, so what it is Channel 4 were broadcasting it, then it got cancelled, I think, after two seasons,
right.
Two short seasons. Yeah. But then I think after loads of... negotiations, Drake got the go-ahead to kind of produce it for another platform.
Drake.
Yeah, Drizzy.
Yeah, he he's in love with that show.
Yeah, yeah. Did you not know that? Right, yeah.
No.
Right. So...
okay.
Yeah, so Drake loved... Yeah, he loved the show. You're absolutely right. He loved it, and it became kind of a passion project for him.
Okay.
So he personally called up, you know, like Asher D... yeah, and stuff.
That's cool.
Going like, what's going on with Top Boy? And you know what I mean? Imagine Drake ringing you. But yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, season 3 came and it was on Netflix. But a lot of people hadn't seen, you know, the first two seasons. So they thought that it was starting from season 3.
Yeah,
but I think Netflix is... I'm sorry. I think Netflix has called Top Boy the first two seasons... oh, they've attached another couple of words to it to give it a slightly different title.
That makes sense, yeah, because I sort of saw it as, oh, okay, what?
Yeah.
Okay, there's more?
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get some pretty high caliber guests on, but you, to me, are one of the most chilled out people, other than Wayne, of course. Do you ever get, like, a little bit nervous about it? Or are you settled into it?
About what, like sort of life in general?
No, not life in general. When you're interviewing these people on Fubar.
Oh, right, sorry. I was about to open Pandora's box there, didn't I?
Yeah, man.
I cry sometimes. No, interviewing people. I don't get nervous unless there's an awkward moment.
Okay.
That's, you know, because we've built the show so that people feel comfortable when they come. And it's just a conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
So as long as they're not visibly nervous and weird, then I'm fine.
Okay.
You know?
And what about those days that you wake up and, you know, sometimes it's just the wrong side of the bed and you're not in the mood? Like, how do you deal with that? How do you push through?
Thankfully, I can only actually get out of my bed on one side. So. No. Do you know, I spend a lot of time by myself.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's quite a good way to kind of reset, man. Like, mm-hmm. if anything's kind of vexing you, sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I think it depends on the person you are. You can get inside your own head a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's no one to kind of counsel you, if you like, and get you out of the doldrums if you're, you know, feeling some type of way. But
yeah.
I think that the way that I am, thankfully, I understand that not everybody's sort of mental state is the same at mm-hmm. all. We are all very different, but you know, the way I deal with things is just by spending time by myself, mm. just chilling out, you know.
Well, sometimes you need space away from other people to work out what is going on in your own mm. head, because otherwise you're taking in everyone else's emotions and the situation at hand and all of that stuff.
Mm.
Talking of off days, the night out on Mare Street is terrible. I'm so joking. in all seriousness. So you've made a point of this, sharing this and sharing the journey. One of the records is called Mike's Back, mm. which features Fabulous Ramesh Ranganathan. Perfect. I said that right, didn't I?
You did.
Who's in the song / video, and he's basically giving you a kick up the ass.
He is.
Wayne, right. For those that may not have heard it yet, I'm going to let Wayne read out what Ramesh says. So prepare yourselves.
Oh, nice. A little transcript.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
I just want to warn you that this accent's about to roll, but no, I'm joking. This
We want okay. some passion, Wayne. Bring it to the floor.
Hi. So, Mikhail, it's Ramesh.
Mikhail, Michael.
Michael. When you see it on paper, it's weird, isn't it?
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. I That was my bad. That was my bad.
It happens all the time.
I saw it.
It's
Trust
our
me.
Guest, Wayne.
I'm right here, man.
I'm joking.
That's a dope rap name, though. No? Yo, it's Michael, man. So, Michael, it's yep. Ramesh. Listen, I don't know what to say to you, man, but please, for fuck's sake, can you get back to rapping? What are you doing now? What is your career? You're doing a radio show, bitching about this and that. You're doing a podcast. You're doing a TV voiceover. What the fuck are you doing? Nobody is a fan of somebody for their TV voiceover work. Fucking hell. I'm trying to be a fan, mate, but I can't with this shit. This shit you're up to recently. So sort it out. Get back to rapping, mate, for fuck's sake.
Perfectly executed.
So I have to ask, and I have been wondering, did he really leave you that voice note?
That is for me to know and for everyone to find out. Well, to never find out. Actually.
Industry secrets.
Yeah. So how did you get back into the zone? Because the first album was released in 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a few years in between, right?
Yeah. Okay. I never really left music, you know, as in stopped doing it completely.
Yeah.
I was still very much involved in both the like sort of the production of music, but then also like just as importantly, radio. I never stopped doing radio.
Yeah.
So I never stopped promoting the music
yeah.
that I liked and playing the music that I liked. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But I was managing an artist, an R&B artist, for a bit and co-writing with her, and you know, enjoyed like some decent and steady sort of progress for a bit before it kind of all ended on a bit of a bad note. So I won't talk too much about that. But
yeah.
at the same time, that experience, it sort of strengthened my ability, I think, to write songs,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah,
in genres other than rap. So that was a learning experience more than anything, you know. Mm-hmm. So other than that, yeah, like, as Ramesh says, I was doing like, you know, like voiceover stuff and just kind of keeping myself busy, because, you know, when a lot of people do voiceovers, they don't write their own script.
Yeah.
But I had the sort of privilege, I guess, of being able to write my own script. So you're just practicing wordplay.
Yeah.
All the time.
Constantly.
You know? So.
Okay.
With, yeah, I was always creative, even if I wasn't being very active as Michael Payne.
And do you remember the exact moment when you were like, okay, I want to make another record now, for me, by me, just me?
Do you know what? I don't, because I can't remember when I first thought it, but sometimes the idea would just go away and I'd get on with something else and then I'd think it again. Do you know what I mean? So I can remember thinking it several times, but I can't pinpoint the first time.
Okay.
Because maybe it could have been like a week after I released my first album, Blame Miss Barkley. It could have been, I just can't remember that far back, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do remember that I was getting songs written, if anything, years ago, mm-hmm. you know, for this album.
Okay.
You know? I can't pinpoint the exact moment that I knew I wanted to make The Night Elm on Mare Street, mm. but I don't know, I guess I must have, because I did.
Yeah. I mean, in some of your lyrics that you say that you were uninspired and tired, so maybe it was constantly battling between that and getting shit done.
Yeah, absolutely. There was definitely that aspect of it that kind of pushed me away from music a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't strong enough to keep me away. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what we need then, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think again, you know, who knows if just like one tiny part of the past was different, who knows what could have like become, you know, what could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could have been really successful, mm-hmm. for instance, with the first album. It could have been like a global phenomenon, right?
Right.
But then the the kind of people around me could have been acting in the same way. And I wonder sometimes, would I have like carried on within music? Would I have been active? Would I have stayed active?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's one of those, I think about it philosophically all the time, and it's hard to kind of communicate sometimes.
But that kind of thing can be very dangerous, because there's so many different alternate lives that we could have led.
Exactly. I think too much about those things.
Yeah, I think creatives do as well, and we always kick ourselves for not doing more every single day. The new EP, how would you describe it?
It's definitely both like sonically, conceptually, and lyrically a look back.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
It's actually two. It's the first half of an album.
Right.
So The Night Elm on Mare Street Part 2 is going to be out in May 2020.
Yes, I saw on your feed. Mm. Yeah.
And the first half looks at, you know, me at sort of growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my attitudes towards fashion, my attitudes towards the birth of the internet. Just all kind of all aspects of my formative years.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's obviously the soundscape is sort of synth.
Yeah.
Video game, 80s film score type music.
It's very Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the younger generation will obviously draw that comparison.
Yeah.
Because they won't have experienced the 80s firsthand.
Yeah.
Whereas me with my dinosaur self did. Do you know what I mean? I'm an 80s baby. So, like, I love, you know, a lot of the music, if not most of the music that came out of the 80s, and it directly informed the style of music that's on the album. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's how I'd sum it up. Lyrically, conceptually, and musically, it's just a look back.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's really engaging. I find it very intelligent and very easy to listen to. I know I sound biased, but I really enjoy it.
Mm.
I think it's really good.
Yeah, we tried to engineer it that way, so that it's like you said, there's something for everyone. You know, the younger generation can say Stranger Things, and I don't mind.
Yeah.
Because I know that Stranger Things is
sick.
Yeah, and it's also a throwback. It's a direct. Yeah. You know, those things would happen. Well, obviously, not the aliens and all that stuff. But, you know, the beings from other realms. But I mean, you know, that music was the sound. I think, you know, the most operative word is that you said it sounds like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And all of the music from Stranger Things would have been around at that time in the early 80s.
Is it Tron, where they've got motorbikes?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, because there's lots of like fluorescent colours and stuff in your videos as well on the TV. Yeah.
So that definitely, like Tron inspired Atto Yankee, who directed the first video from the album, The Night Elm on Main Street. And he kind of took me through all of his inspirations for the during the treatment kind of talks. And he definitely was inspired by Tron. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's very cool. What is your process of writing like? Do you have to sit in like a dark basement, or do you just write it down? Is it comes to you?
It's mad. I was talking to you earlier on before we started recording about how I write scripts when I do when I do voiceover stuff, and it's kind of the same when I write lyrics as well. I kind of do everything on the go. So if I'm in the studio, don't get me wrong, you know, and we are specifically in there to write a song, then I will sit down and I will write. But it's very likely that I will draw a lot of lyrics from stuff that I already wrote on the go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very unlikely that I will just write a complete song then and there with no lines that I wrote earlier on in life. Do you know what I mean? So the song kind of gets built up like that. If I think of a good concept and I can sum it up in just a word, you'll just see random stuff in my notes, man. My notes is wild, like just weird words or couplets or just two words that rhyme or...
But I kind of like that because that means nothing gets wasted or lost.
Exactly.
Like there's always a place for it, maybe if it's just not now, it's in like a different song.
And that is definitely my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing should get wasted. If you have something that you thought sounded good, then like just keep it there. You never know when you might need it. Nothing gets wasted. Be economical with all your ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same across the board, you know, for a songwriter, for a graphic artist, for a filmmaker, you know, and just store your ideas and then
revamp them.
Yeah.
Because this show is actually kind of like a revamp of this thing that I had called Fresh Meat Channel, basically trying to get loads of different getting loads of creative people together to just combine their work and collab and da da da. I wasn't getting paid for it, which was fine because I wanted to do it, but then I felt like this podcast is actually works better for me and most people. It's easier to upkeep and it's just better.
Yeah.
But the basis of it is still there.
Yeah.
So
that's nice.
Yeah, no. I do think that it works like that a lot of the time. So when you do get into a low space, back to mental health, so you do have some very successful friends. Do you ever beat yourself up, like going back to what you said before, or do you find it inspiring to be around those people? Like, do they help you want to do more?
I'll be very clear, like When it comes to friends, like actual people that I spend a lot of time with, you know, I've got a lot of people that I'm friendly with, that I'm acquainted with, and we get along. But when you really deep it, like when you really, really think about it, most people have like a handful of people that they talk to all the time, for instance, that they see all the time. And I think that is what keeps me grounded. I don't actually really like hang out with celebrities or like I've made music with some absolute superstars, but I hang out with like on a normal day, I hang out with my girlfriend or I hang out with like my best mate Reese.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or I hang out with my brother, like he's not my biological brother, but we've known each other for like 23 years. Like,
oh, wow.
He's been there through everything. So,
okay,
those are the kind of people that I kind of surround myself with. Mm. So that maybe it is a defense mechanism. Maybe it is because I know that I am like underrated, for instance, and But at the same time, I've been doing it for so long that, you know, I mean, how could I have predicted that I would even make? Because I know I've made a dent in sort of in this sort of musical sphere and stuff. But at the same time, sometimes I don't think that I'm getting my flowers.
Right. Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I do get what you're saying.
But at the same time, you know, I just think I apply balance to everything. If I ever think to myself, oh, you're underrated, I think, yeah, but for you to be considered underrated, enough people must think that you're sick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%. Yeah.
Enough people for there to be a voice, a collective voice of people saying you're underrated, they must think you ought to be bigger than you are. That, and that's a compliment in itself, right?
Massively.
And then I think to get to that level, like, I've done what I needed to do when I had the opportunity. Like, you get a chance, for instance, to do a song with the biggest pop star in the world. You know, that happened before he was massive. That happened before Ed Sheeran was massive, Little Lady. The song was a song of substance. The song had a message, a dark message, you know, albeit it had a message, you know. I feel like I took that opportunity. So I feel like even if I am underrated now, if it finally comes to the stage where I do get my flowers, people can look back at my rap sheet and be like, well,
exactly,
you know.
I only ask that because sometimes I do find myself, and even without knowing that I'm doing it, comparing myself to some of my friends.
Yeah.
But now I've managed to switch it around where I go, okay, well, I want to do better and I want to be able to go to these things and work with these people, etc., etc. Because I think a lot of people do see it, and it's that whole Instagram life anyway, where you're constantly comparing to somebody's, what do they call it, their highlight reel.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I just think it's important to see it as an inspiration rather than something that gets you down. Yeah,
totally, man. I think you just, if anyone ever is feeling down or, you know, underappreciated, I think you, and it sounds cliche and cheesy, but you've just got to look at the stuff that you have achieved, you know, and realize that everyone is on a different path. Like, people just kind of get conditioned to think that everyone is on the same path, you know. And there are people who you're far further along than, technically. It is hard. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Trying to kind of think positively all the time and not comparing yourself. It just seems like such a reflex.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It seems like human nature, comparing yourself.
Yeah. It's a difficult one. I think there does need to be a little bit of that. But then also not to get bogged down with it when you're scrolling your phone.
Yeah.
And I do think it's very important, like, the people you surround yourself with. Like you said, you've got good friends around you and things like that. I know in the past I've fallen into friendship groups or whatever where it's a lot of gossip and negativity and stuff. And then I'm not creative, because you do need to be around these supportive people or people that want to do projects and do things. So I think it really affects people. I mean, what do you think? Do you, when you're around people, Wayne, that work in the film industry and like films like you, do you feel more inspired to go home and write something?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a tough one because I don't know, like, in a weird way, like, with a lot of film, I feel like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to sort of like verbalize, but for me, like, when it comes to film, it's very personal. Like, a lot of the things that I'll sort of want to do and stuff like that. So, the thing I always try and remember to myself is, well, okay, I see a great film. I'm just like, man, how did you do that? And then I think to myself, well, okay, so you did that, and that's you. But I can't sit there and say, oh, I'm going to make something like that. Because we're not on, like you said, we're not on the same path. We're not on the same, you know, we're not telling the same story.
Yeah.
So, like, for me personally, there are stories that I'm going to be able to tell that certain other filmmakers aren't, and vice versa. So, like, I've always got, you know, that's always something to remember when you're sort of thinking, oh, yeah, I've got to compare myself, stuff like that. Because, like, you know, I always think to myself, Martin Scorsese, he's really good at making, like, good films, stuff like that. But Martin Scorsese couldn't then go and do, because like the whole, there's been this whole, you know, Martin Scorsese, some success of my Marvel stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
of course, yeah. They've been wading in on just slewing Marvel films, him and...
And like, he is well within his right. Like, both of them, they are like masters of film success. They made some of the greatest films of all time. But there are films that they have made that the Marvel directors can't make, and vice versa. Because I feel like if you put them in the same systems, some would flourish, some would not. And so that's the thing I always remember. And like, yeah, so it's all about perspective to some extent.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, you can get bogged down in what you're not doing, but you've got to focus on what you can do, what you want to do, and what you're capable of.
Absolutely.
And you will grow as time goes on. You will get better at certain stuff. And like, you know, like, I don't know. Life isn't just about sort of being in one place and that's going to be it for the rest of your life. It's like, you will grow over time and things will get better. And like, you know, you'll get better, or you may find something else that you want to do or something like that. Like, it's not all set in stone. So like, that's what I was trying to remember, is that like, everything's always ebbing and flowing. So
And that's the thing with the concept of a path as well. I think automatically when people go, oh, you're not on the same path, people think of paths as straight. In their mind, they think of the path as straight. But paths aren't straight. You go on a path through a park, it's gonna meander and all that, them
facts.
Do you know what I mean? So I think you're absolutely right. It's all different perspectives and directions, and your vibe attracts your tribe and all those other cliches.
Talking of tribes, so you're talking about, you've got quite a solid support system. My favourite person in that support system is your little godson Kyrain. Who's in the music video. So cute. How was that? How was the music video? How did it go?
Brilliantly. So we for the first video, The Night Elm on Mare Street, we, when Atto, the director, told me his idea, I immediately, because I knew I wanted Kyrain, my godson, involved in the aesthetics of the album somehow. So, I told him that I wanted, I asked him if he could think of a role for Kyrain, and then, in fact, no, I think I'd already told him that I wanted Kyrain to feature as a younger me. So it just came to him sort of being able to insert him into the concept. And he did brilliantly. So we shot for like 12 hours.
And he was good for all that time.
No, thankfully not him. Like, I had to shoot my performance scene over and over again, because if you see in the video, I'm flickering in different spots on the screen. So that involved having to stand still in one spot, perform the song, stand at a slightly different angle in the same spot. And we repeated that many, many times. So that took a few hours. And then we drove out to, I can't remember, Pinner, I think, and met my godson, and then filmed all his scenes in about maybe 3-4 hours. But he was great for the 3 or 4. He's a very, he's a cool kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
He looks cool.
Yeah, he's a very cool kid.
And where were you filming? Was that a set or was that somebody's house?
Someone's house.
Oh, that's so old school.
They've maintained it, this kind of, the sort of late 70s, early 80s decor in the house, from everything, the wallpaper, furniture, even the bathroom, like, all, even the stuff that was out of shot.
Wow.
Brilliantly maintained. Well, I heard they filmed some of The Crown. You know The Crown? That series. They filmed some of that in the house.
Really? So
they kind of, you know, they hire it out as a location.
But do they live there too?
It's a doctor or a chemist or something.
Doctor Who?
The guy's just this elderly chemist.
Cool.
He must be in his like late 80s. You know, he just rents out his house, and brilliant. Really cool. Sick. Just kind of stayed in the kitchen. I felt quite bad as well, because he and his wife were just sort of in the kitchen really quietly while we were filming. But that lovely people, yeah.
Yeah. And they're making dollar, man. Don't have to do anything.
That's the thing.
Did you see like different parts of the house that you're thinking, oh, maybe we can incorporate that too?
I've been taught to be so respectful when you go to people's houses.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what we came to do. That's what we came to film.
Yeah.
It makes me uncomfortable when people are disrespectful in people's homes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So okay. Even when, like, the director was like, see if we can get 5 more minutes. I was like, no, let's not. Like, let's wrap this. Do you know what I mean? I was getting a bit... It makes me uncomfortable seeing disrespect in people's homes. But again, that's just the way I was raised.
No, I feel that. Talking of live performances, so you recently did your first comeback show at the Moth Club?
Yeah.
Which I missed because I'm an idiot.
That's all right, there'll be more.
Good. It looked like it was a massive success. How did you prepare, or did you prepare for going back on stage?
It's really easy when you're an MC, man. You've got the advantage of being just you. You're not in a band. Yeah. You haven't got to round up a load of people and say, you know, let's get back into this. It's just you, innit?
Yeah.
You know, I've got a DJ, Melody Kane. She's mm-hmm. amazing, really supportive. And literally, do you know what it was? I hired a rehearsal space. I took it seriously, you know, even though I'm, you know, a solo act. I hired a rehearsal space for like 7 hours, maybe a couple of days before, and just went through the whole set. And but then when I was doing the rehearsal, I had the idea that because the album is all kind of that, you know, that it's got that 80s vibe, I thought to keep the enthusiasm going throughout the gig, I'll place a load of tunes in between the songs in the set.
Yeah.
So I had songs like Whip It by Devo. I had Foreigner with I Wanna Know What Love Is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I had like Alphaville with Forever Young.
Brilliant.
Stuff like that, you know, yeah. And the sing-along factor with those songs. The possibilities are endless, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loved it, and it just, like I said, it kept the vibe there in between all the songs.
Good.
And
did at any point, was it quite emotional?
Or is yeah, it absolutely, just... yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people came up to me at the end of the gig and expressed just, it kind of evokes different emotions for different people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like different memories, especially.
Okay.
So those emotions will be attached to memories, because that whole venue and everything, it felt like a prom.
Yes, with the whole gold thing sparkle exactly. behind and stuff.
The whole thing kind of felt like a prom, and yes, I think a lot of people kind of looked back at their formative years, maybe.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
That's so cool.
A lot of people hooked up at the gig as well. Yeah, so many people came out and was like, I hooked up with your mate. I'm like, man, fair play.
Bringing people together.
Honestly.
And so when are your other shows coming up?
Do you haven't got any dates? Confirmed yet.
Okay,
but, so people got to keep but an very eye. Soon, yeah. As soon as the second part of the album drops, I'm going to start announcing dates.
Sick. Okay, Wayne, you coming?
Yeah.
Wicked. And last but not least, puns. We need to talk about your puns. So brilliant. How do you do it for every single photo that you have? Like,
Do you know,
it's so
I like,
good.
I like Instagram because of photographs.
Yeah.
And when I first got Instagram, it was actually Example that convinced me to get Instagram.
Really?
Yeah, he was my first follower, weirdly, yeah. We were talking on Twitter and he was like, oh, you... Because I think I used to put puns on photos on Twitter.
Right.
Or TwitPic and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he was like, you should get this new thing called Instagram. And I was like, what's that kind of thing? And he showed me, and I wasn't interested at first. But then, yeah, he convinced me I got it. And then I realised that it was just this community of, like, what was important was the fact that it was photos at first. The puns were just an aside, like, you know, have this with the photo, kind of, yeah. You know. I do love to kind of play with words. You know that I am. I'm an MC, like, yeah. You know. I think my main... If someone asked me what I did, to sum it up, I'm a communicator.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I just communicate things, whether it's an idea or just literally what's in my head at the time. and Instagram was just a thing where what snappy way could I describe this photo? It was just kind of a personal challenge to me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then I became quite well known for it somehow. And yeah.
Well, I mean, some of the pictures and captions that you do, I'm like, how the hell do you come up with that? Like, I just, and I try sitting for ages going, picture of me sat on a bus, can't think of anything, but I know you'd have about five ready.
it's years of practice, honestly. And it's just, people think about different things in different ways. Yeah. I just happen to be one of those people that sees so much more in words than the average person, if you get what I'm saying to you.
Yeah.
Like, to a fault, you know. I can spend too much time just reading a fucking title and seeing. Or like, you know, I'll be watching a film with my girlfriend sometimes and they'll say one phrase and I'll just be like, I'll be going nuts because I'll be like, that was just such a sick, subtle reference to something. Or it doesn't even have to be a phrase. It could be something going on in the background. And I love picking out references to things and double meanings. And it's just, yeah, it's an obsession.
But I feel like that's where the talent lies as well.
Yeah, because it kind of goes both ways. I don't just like to create puns or double entendres. And I like to detect them as well.
I do like to discover and detect them,
especially in like cinema and TV, and like, you know, a lot. I watched Mad Men like three times to pick up on certain things and just get that kind of feeling that, oh my god, I discovered that by myself.
Sick. Yeah. Do you like Mad Men?
I watched a couple episodes and I was like, it's good. I need to watch it now. I'm terrible at TV. It's only films.
But that's what I love about a lot of these sort of Netflix or Amazon or, you know, HBO series. They're kind of like long, drawn-out films. They kind of have the excitement of a feature-length film, but the experience is more drawn out. Do you know what I mean? Like Sopranos, for me. You could have condensed that into a film, you know?
Yeah, I do. It'd be too much at once.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It'd be too intense. So it's better several seasons. The Wire. Yeah. Love that.
It's kind of what you're doing with your albums as well. It's like, here's part one and then part two.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks for having me.
It's really a pleasure.
Honestly. And I'm going to be really honest now. I was a little bit nervous because when we used to do radio together, I wasn't in the best place. And so I think it's the association that was like, oh no, I'm going to mess up, da da da. It's gone absolutely fine. Mm. But I also want to take the opportunity to say thank you for being so lovely then. And just, you made me feel much more confident in myself.
Be honest with you, man, those were my early days as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So I was just as new to it as you. Do you know what I mean? So I think we kind of had each other's back in that sense.
Okay.
You know?
You're just a very chilled specimen, I think. So
yeah, I think it's quite my persona belies my actual kind of
thinking.
Yeah, what's going on in my head a lot of the time, you know.
Can you stay a little longer to help us answer some questions that have been sent in?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, you ready, Wayne, as well?
Yeah.
So, firstly, we have a question from Helen Scott, who asks, do you think friendships can substitute therapy?
Ooh. I think in some situations, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you've got a friend that non-judgmentally listens and... Because I don't know what a professional therapist does, basically. I haven't seen one, and I don't want to take everything I see in films at face value.
Yeah.
Do you get me?
Yeah.
So I'd never lie and say that I'm kind of clued up on everything that it takes to be a professional therapist. But I feel like having a friend or being a friend that someone can kind of talk to and have them listen is like, it's invaluable. Mm-hmm. So maybe it has saved me from having to go to a therapist.
Yeah.
And also, I could have done that for a friend as well, you know? Yeah. I try to make sure I listen to my friends, you know, when they need someone to listen to and offer advice when it feels like they're seeking it. So who knows?
Yeah.
I would say if you're considering seeking therapy, just do it. Mm. You know?
I do think that to a certain extent friends can be good for that, but I think it needs to be two way, because I don't think Absolutely. You can go and offload everything and then never expect to do it back. That's the only thing that I would say, probably.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I would say to a point.
Mm.
Because, well, I guess, I don't know, I don't really spoke about this. So, effectively, so my grandma died in 2016. And for a little while after, I don't know, I was sort of floating in this space of like, I don't know, grief is a weird thing, because grief will hit you, like, it's not like, funny enough, it's not like it is in the films where it's like, oh, you know, you're wailing, crying on the floor, you've passed out, stuff like that. And there are some people who sort of deal with it in that way, but it's just sort of like, it just dulls everything around you. And I think it got to a point with me where it's just like, I had become so disillusioned with everything around me to a point where it's like, well, what's the point, to some extent, you know? Like, I had seen this woman who I love go through dementia and Alzheimer's for almost a decade, and her life ends, and then that's it. And it's not like a dignified, you know, send out the klaxon, fire off the cannons kind of thing. It's just, no, it was all personal, it's all sort of inner, and it's just, oh, I was in a bad, bad place. It's just, you know, it was just sinking, and it was something that I couldn't really talk to anyone that I knew. Like, I could tell my friends, oh yeah, I'm feeling bad, but it's like, it was such a deep feeling that it was just like, I don't know if I want to drag you all down with me, because this is a dark, dark place. So through NHS I got some counselling, mm-hmm. and in 2017 I spoke to a counsellor, and I actually missed the first session because I was like, oh, it's flipping American fucking Yank thing to do, go see your therapist. It's like, whatever. But then they called me again, and I was like, okay, fine, I'll go to the second session. And it was a great decision, because like, it was just, you know, they are like the ultimate listeners to some extent. They just sort of hear what you're saying, they are attentive, they, you know, read your emotions, they're very kind, but they will also ask you questions that make you think deeper about, well, why do you feel like this, to a point where, and in a way that sort of like doesn't make you feel like, you know, because I think as a friend who's been there for friends and vice versa, it gets to a point where there are just some things that you're not going to be able to help them with, and it's just like, there's just some dark stuff that it's like, I can only say this, and I can only really give you a hug or a high five, or, you know, offer you
something like, fun to take your mind off it.
Yeah.
Do something fun and stuff like that. And like, with therapy, for me, it was just a place where I could just sort of say all the dark things and all the sad things I was feeling, I could just sort of say them without feeling like, because I think for me, it just got to a point where I was like, I don't want to worry anyone around me. I don't want them to feel like, oh God, I'm going to have to worry about you because something bad might happen. I didn't ever want to feel like that. So with therapy, it was like, yeah, I could sort of say whatever I need to feel without someone being like, okay, let's, you know. Let's
intervention.
Let's get the the asylum coming. So like, yeah, I think it's always good to be there for your friends, but also at the same time, it can take a toll on you, man.
Yeah.
It really can. Or it's just like, you know, you want to be there for a friend, but I don't know. Sometimes it can get to a point where that can be the only thing in your friendship.
Yeah.
Okay. And
when it gets to that point, you have to sort of put the brakes on it, because if it only becomes that you're sort of the, I guess, like, emotional respite for them, then it's just like, it changes things.
Yeah.
And you've got to be careful.
Yeah.
Never let it get to a point where it's like, oh man, I am, you know, if I don't want to listen to, if I'm feeling horrible and then you're going to come to me and have to say something more horrible, and then I'm thinking about my horrible things and putting your horrible things to me, and I don't want to hear it, then I'm just going to feel awful. And, you know, you've just got to set boundaries, which I think is the best way to go. But yeah.
Yeah. So I reckon to a certain extent, but beyond that, maybe professional help is better.
Yeah.
Question number two from Gabby Mia, who asks, do you have any random activities that help pull you out of a funk? For example, watching Noel Fielding do something specific on YouTube.
I don't know. It's not tough, really. Yeah. I don't. I can't think of anything kind of. Like, I do random stuff sometimes, but it isn't really to pull myself out of a funk.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't mean.
Yeah.
So I'm really into YouTube a lot. Like, one of the things that I love to do if I'm, like, feeling kind of crappy sometimes is, like, you know what? Let's watch a bunch of people get surprised by dogs on their birthday or, like, Christmas stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just go down a rabbit hole for, like, hours on end of just people just being hysterical about getting a puppy or stuff like that.
Yeah,
just
like,
oh, that's so sweet.
It just change your mood.
Yeah.
You mess around and cry tears of joy and stuff, and you're crying the wrong tears. You know?
Yeah.
I think mine, I always go back to the same thing of bedroom dancing. You just pick a pop star, put on a show, and then you're exercising at the same time.
That's nice.
It's escapism, isn't it? Yeah. Does that sound quite weird?
No, I think it's fun. It's a very sort of private thing, isn't it? You know.
Well, I hate it when my mum walks in. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. But like once you're in your own, you're right. When I say private, I mean it's like it's just you feel so like so, and this is going to sound depressing, but you feel so alone yet so happy. Do you know what I mean? You feel like you are. Just there's nothing like having fun by yourself.
That sounds quite rude, Michael.
I know it does, doesn't it? Yeah. Had to be quite careful about that.
Yeah.
It's true. Facts are facts. So I hope that answers your questions, Helen and Gabby. Once again, if you want to follow us, we are on Instagram at @thekind_thecreative_thechaotic. Michael, where can people find you?
Can find me at Michael Payne across the board, MikiLLPane. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, all those good old music platforms.
Wicked. And in real life soon when you're doing gigs too.
Exactly.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Michael.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Wayne.
Yeah.
And thank you, listeners. I think that is everything.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Remember I told you that I have an anxiety issue?